And it's Friday. That means it's time for our weekly visit to the barbershop where the guys talk about what's in the news and what's on their minds. Sitting in the chairs for a shape up this week, writer Jimmy Israel. He's with us from Cleveland. Joining us from Pittsburgh, Lenny McAllister. He's the host of Get Right with Lenny McAllister on KDKA News Radio. In Boston, Neil Minkoff, a healthcare consultant and contributor to National Review magazine. And in New York, columnist and blogger Jeff Yang. Take it away, Jimmy.
Hey, hey, hey. It's Jimmy Israel. Welcome to the shop. How we doing?
Yeah, hey, Jimmy.
All right, Jeff, it's been a while, man. Welcome back.
Thank you.
Too long, bro. Too long. Well, you know what? Let's get it started. As it happens, Maverick will fly the skies again. Danger zone. Hashtag Archer. Yes, Tom Cruise is slated to appear at a sequel to 1986's Top Gun for reasons we're not quite sure of. Let's hear a clip from the original. Drop that.
You figured it out yet? What's that? Who's the best pilot? No, I think I can figure that one out on my own. I heard that about you. You like to work alone.
Oy. Well, yeah, we all hope Iceman comes back. And, you know, this made Tom Mapother, that is Tom Cruise, the original Maverick, a household name. So now producer Jerry Bruckheimer said the remake will reflect today's technology, but I also wonder if it'll include the same Reagan-era propaganda that might equals right. I don't know, but it is set to have drones. Dr. Neil, will a 51-year-old Tom Cruise still have his need for speed or just, I don't know, he might just have kidney stones. Go ahead.
Just reading about this makes me laugh. I have this image of you know, Tom Cruise walking in and saying, Goose, you lost your hair and ice. I don't know if you fit in the plane anymore and all this. Going back to the well just kind of feels dangerous to me. It's going to be funny to see if the movie becomes something different as Tom Cruise grapples with the idea of drone warfare, or maybe they'll just steal a page from Iron Man 3 and he'll just do everything by remote control this time.
I don't think Goose will be there unless this is a ghost story, Neil.
Oh, yeah. Yikes. All right.
Just saying.
Jeff Yang, would you buy a ticket?
Oh, man. No, I hated this movie. It was Tom Cruise at his most suffocatingly smug. And it was basically the movie that launched the whole military entertainment complex. I mean, the Pentagon was referring to this film as a two-hour-long commercial for recruitment. And it worked. Like, I think there was a boost of 500% in military enlistment after Top Gun.
Oh. Let us give props to 12 O'Clock High with Gregory Peck. You know, and this movie actually, to me, kind of reflected, it was kind of a mixture between that movie and Animal House. And I think that was a sensibility that kind of drove it into the popular mindset. Lenny.
Yes.
Jeff's hating on Top Gun a little bit. Were you a fan?
I saw the movie. I'm more looking forward to the soundtrack. I think the soundtrack from 30 years ago, the best song was Take My Breath Away. I'm looking forward to the best song on this soundtrack being I Can't Catch My Breath, basically on the age of all these folks. So we'll see how this turns out.
There's a two-drink minimum, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for that, Mr. McAllister. All right, well, let's keep it moving. Take that, because somebody else is moving back to the glory days. Kind of. Rapper Sean Combs, also known as P. Diddy, Puff Daddy, and whatever it is this week, he'll deliver the commencement speech at Howard University next month. But not everyone is excited. Some critics say the honor should go to a college graduate as if. You know, and of course we all know that Puffy Combs, he left Howard after 2 years. Now, to me, I've always respected the fact that, I mean, sometimes I don't know, if you're going to college to get a job, then you're going to college for the wrong reason anyway. I mean, to me, for what I've known about Puffy, and I've known him, I've met him a few times, I've known people in his circle, shout out to Combat Jack, Reggie Osei. I say that he got out when he got out, and he got out when the getting was good, and I think he is a role model. I mean, he took what he needed, and he went into the world, and he changed the world, not unlike other college dropouts, hashtag Mark Zuckerberg. Lenny McAllister, what do you think?
Number one, I mean, you can talk about Muhammad Ali giving commencement speeches at colleges. You can talk about Bill Gates. And heck, didn't Mike Tyson win an honorary degree during a commencement way back
Holy
when.
If
Velvet Kermit Frog, can do that, Kermit the Frog has gotten an honorary degree.
Okay, so if you can do that, why can't Sean Puffy Combs, who has impacted the world over the last 20 years, be able to have the same type of distinction?
Take that, take that, take that. Neil Minkoff, do you agree?
Yeah, I think it's a big irony alert. So from my understanding, people who are upset about this are going on their iPhone, brought to market by a college dropout, to access Facebook, brought to market by a college dropout, or access Twitter, brought to market by a college dropout, to complain that they don't want to hear from a college dropout. Does that seem incongruous to anybody else? I mean, there was this article one time about how the best thing to be wasn't a Harvard alumnus, it was a Harvard dropout, and they went back to William Randolph Hearst and Damon and Affleck and Gates and all these people who have done tremendous things because they realized college wasn't for them.
Yeah. Uh-huh. I like that. Yo, Jeff Yang, your take?
No, I agree. I think this is like just kind of hypocritical, and there's no question that to some degree, you look at these billionaires, these fellow moguls who are white, nobody asks that question, right? So what up?
What up indeed?
To quote a famous college dropout, it's all about the Benjamins, baby.
You're listening to our weekly Barbershop Roundtable. We're joined by writer Jimmy Israel, columnist Jeff Yang, Republican strategist Lenny McAllister, and contributor to National Review, Neil Minkoff. Let's move on, Jimmy.
Yeah, that's right, because we invented the remix, Celeste. Thank you. Moving to Missouri. Shout out, Puffy. A youth football coach managed to avoid prison for 13 years due to a clerical error until the popo finally came a-knocking.
Ain't that right, Celeste? That's correct. Cornelius Mike Anderson robbed a Burger King employee more than a decade ago. After his conviction, he went home on bond as instructed. He waited to hear when he should report to prison. He never heard, so he just kept living a normal life. He got a job, he got married, he had kids. After 13 years, officials realized their mistake and they jailed him to serve his full sentence. But his lawyer says it's unfair, it's unconstitutional, and Anderson was recently interviewed on the public radio show This American Life. Here's what he said.
I never felt like a fugitive, because a fugitive is someone that's running from the law. I never ran from law. I was there. I registered my business through the state, you know, with social security number, address, everything. I'm four streets over from the address that they had on file, you know, built a house over there. So there was never any running or strategy of, hey, I don't want to go here because there's going to be authorities. And no, I lived a normal life.
Oh, boy. Thanks for that, Michelle. You know what?
Celeste.
I'm sorry. Celeste. Sorry, Celeste.
It's okay.
I'm thinking about you, Michelle.
I'm going to let that one slide.
Yeah, but I know a lot of people think he shouldn't have to serve his time, but I'm sorry. This is still America when I woke up. You know, you do the – I mean, I think Sammy Davis Jr. put it the best. I mean, you don't do the crime if you can't do the time. Yeah. You know, so, I mean, bro, I mean, justice deferred is justice, bro. I don't know what to tell you. You know, I mean, just take that knock and, that's me and I'm sticking to that. Lenny, what do you think?
He shouldn't go to jail. I mean, the bottom line is, in this specific case, this guy contributed to his society. He improved his community. He did not run, and the state made a mistake. Now, how many folks have been flipping drugs out there last night, got arrested by the popo, and they released on a bond? If you're going to let those folks go out to go flip drugs this weekend, and you're going to go get somebody that's contributing to his society and paying taxes, he's a homeowner. What kind of sense does that make? It doesn't. In this case, he should stay free. Maybe probation, and then let him expunge his record afterwards. He's done actually the very – he's gone down a very unique path.
Oof, Lenny's
fired up.
Why
do I have a picture of you in my head, like, holding an American flag as you run through this? I'm sorry. Thank you for that, Lenny. Jeff, your take?
Oh, man. You know, I think setting aside the justice angle of this, I just imagine what his life was like. I mean, it's like a Dora Welty short story while listening to Johnny Cash, you know? Every morning he wakes up, kisses his daughter, and then are the police going to come today? I think that he, you know, setting aside justice, he should do community service, and he should be telling his story all across America.
Okay. He is now.
Okay, well, all right. Dr. Neil?
Well, I'm you call me Dr. Neil, I'm no lawyer, but this seems cruel and unusual to me to delay a punishment for 13 years and then realize that a clerical error is they went to release him and found out that he wasn't actually in jail. So the whole thing is just surreal, and it does make me question whether or not the original punishment was fair and accurate in the first place.
There's a good point.
Well, okay. So now on to another man who thinks the law did him wrong. Former Major League Baseball player Doug Glanville said he was approached by a police officer recently for shoveling while black. he's shoveling snow outside his own Hartford, Connecticut home, right? When an officer came by and asked him what he was doing, he wrote about it for The Atlantic. I read it, and I mean, the only thing I can really think of, you know, is that water's still wet. And, you know, this is still America, and I guess this is why they call it news, because it's not. You know, I mean, this kind of thing has happened to me. It's happened to other young or not-so-young-ish black men that I know. And when I read it, I felt as if this might have been like a Danny Glover moment, that for some reason that Glanville thought his fame and his money trumped his color. And I don't know what to tell you, but good morning, America, bro. I mean, you know, I mean, that's just how it's going down. Lenny, your take.
I take that he was shoveling while rich and black and Ivy League educated. And when you see these things transpire, this is why you still have to have conversations about race in America, despite what Mr. Williams says as he's singing about being happy.
Yeah. Oh, okay. I think we almost said the same thing. Neil, what do you think?
Yeah, I think the whole story is just you know, it brings to mind what happened in Cambridge when the police, as the president so famously said, acted stupidly. And it makes me wonder
with
why.
With Henry Louis Gates, you mean, yeah.
Yes, mm-hmm. Exactly right. And it makes me wonder why there isn't more, even if the police want to behave this way, why there isn't more training or sensitivity about why you shouldn't, because it can backfire and lead to a lot of problems.
Wait a second, though. I took Skip to task famously on theroot.com. And let me just say, anytime you say a cop's mama, you know, you're going to end up in some mess. I don't care if you're Henry Louis Gates or you're Moses. I mean, you talk about some cop's mama, it's going to be a real problem for your life.
No, I understand that it escalated. So, but the initial approach on the porch was unusual, to say the least.
Yeah, he was
apprehended by police when he was trying to get into his own home. But that's not – Dan Glanville was outside his own home. Jeff, what are you – weigh in here.
You know, I the one line from his story that really just wrenched my gut was the one where he's talking about his wife talking to their kids and basically telling them for the first time that this is the thing, this anecdote, this happening is a thing that reminds us all we are black. And, you know, it just made me realize you have to ask yourself this question. Would you get asked this question? That's all, right?
That's a good question, but let's move on to something a little bit less of a deep philosophical question. We have just a few minutes left, and if you're getting a tax return and it's at least $1,500, maybe you've considered buying some new shades. Google Glass, they went on sale in the U.S. on Tuesday for one day only, and I'm curious which of you would actually lay down the money to buy them. Lenny, would you?
Nope.
Okay. No. Neil, what about you?
So I have to say that I'm incredibly tempted by the idea of being that connected, but I do worry about the fact that there are times when being online seems more real than being in reality, and I actually think that's a little disturbing. So I would be tempted, but at least for now, I am resisting the temptation.
And we know on this show that you sometimes have a problem walking away from gadgets. But Jeff Yang, what do you think? You've written about these glasses.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I would seem to be the primary target for this, right? But
right.
I would never buy these. I think that they've essentially become a screening filter for elitist tech tool bags, like kind of this symbol of the new class-based digital divide. And I think Google basically screwed this up from the get-go. I mean, they ran a contest to see who gets to have the chance to buy, you know, these $1,500 glasses long before they made it open to the public. So, you know, basically you're filtering out the people who think they're all that and that this particular technology, which is interesting, makes them all that. I can't see it.
Wait a second. Let's talk about the interesting technology. I mean, for those who, I mean, I can't imagine there's someone in the United States who doesn't know what Google Glass is, but we're talking about glasses where you can basically be surfing the internet while you're walking around and taking pictures of them with your glasses and things, right? Am I mm-hmm. wrong here, Jeff?
Yeah. Sure, well, you know, sure. I do that with my phone anyways.
Yeah. Right?
But, you know, it's true. I mean, this is just basically something that allows you to hands-free what a lot of people are already doing when they're just walking around the town. And on some level, the bigger issue, of course, is whether or not other people know what you're doing when you're looking at them. That is kind of freaky.
Well, let me go back to Lenny, because you had one word answered, Lenny. I mean, there is a safety thing here that people say, to a certain extent, everyone is walking around with their face in their tablets and their phones, and maybe Google Glass will make it safer to do what they're already doing, right? You don't have to put your head down. You can see if there's a car coming.
Yeah, and you're still distracted on the internet. And then what's next? Are you going to end up finding a law that says you can't wear your Google glasses while you're driving? Heck, people still wear their earphones and listen to their phones while they're driving. It's a big mess. And for me, no. I just would not spend $1,500 on this. No. It would have to come with a free lottery ticket giving me $50 million.
All right. Well, Jimmy, I kind of feel like I can guess what your answer is to this because you just recently got on Twitter. But what about you? Would you lay out the $1,500 for Google Glass?
I'm reminded of like the 80s where brothers were stealing Kazals off people's faces. And those were like $70,
$80 off their faces?
Kazals, C-A-Z-A-Ls. The real fly people remember those glasses.
I guess I'm not fly.
And they were snatching those off people's faces. Can you imagine? You're going to have like a big target on your face. You walking around with some $1,500 glasses. So count me out. I don't even want to wear my Jordans out. Are you serious? I'm not wearing no $1,500 glasses. This is a recession. No.
Although I can imagine them making copycats that look just like Google Glass so you can pretend you have them and they're just, you know, see-through glass, right? I mean, that's inevitable.
But you might get your head knocked with some fake Google glasses. Like the fake Kazals.
I remember when these were first announced, I was like, at some point, we're going to see the first time where somebody wearing Google Glass is going to be run over by a driverless Google car. And then it's like the ultimate tech headline.
Jeff Yang has gone straight down the rabbit hole, everyone. Just so you know, pretty much we're going to have a black hole appearing in the studio. Jeff Yang, columnist with the Wall Street Journal Online. Lenny McAllister is the host of Get Right with Lenny McAllister on News Radio KDKA in Pittsburgh. Neil Minkoff is a healthcare consultant and contributor to the National Review out there in Boston. And Jimmy Israel, of course, writer. You can find his blog at jimmyisrael.com. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
God bless. Thank you.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Happy weekend.